It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium. We have been talking with Cash McCollum, talking about enabling versus support as substance as a use as a treatable disease with the Grays Harbor Consortium.
I think for some of us with an extensive amount of history, there's always demons lurking out there in the darkness. You know what I mean? And and I think that's why some of them, at least from the school of thought that I like to support and that I believe in for myself, and that's why I talk about being in recovery as opposed to being recovered. Is because for me, I'm just I can do a million great and important things. I could cure cancer, but those other habits are always right there waiting for me to go back to anytime I want to. If I ever get a notion to destroy my life, it'll take about 3 minutes. So
that's always in your mind, then, isn't it?
Right. It is for me.
Right.
For me and. And as opposed to using it as some sort of fear tactic or some sort of regret, I use it for fuel. I use it for fuel every day at my job. I use it for fuel whenever I'm talking to somebody that's going through some of the struggle. And I relate some of my own history to other people that are going through some of the same things. For me, I don't regret a single piece of my past. Because I get to use that to...
Well, you help so many people now because of what you yourself have gone through.
Right.
You can see it in the other people.
Yeah, and that's a great blessing, and that's why a lot of the... I think that's why a lot of these recovery programs work with people with lived experience as a part of the recovery, right? Because we work on ourselves, get to a certain spot, and then that work continues on ourselves when we get to see progress in other people that we're working with. And we're not, and that might be where some of the support versus enabling comes in, right? Is I can walk next to you, I can walk with you, and I can walk ahead of you a little bit, and you can follow in my footsteps a little bit. But as soon as I start dictating to you what exactly you need to do, that's where I start going wrong. We could have a ton of similar things in the past, but I don't know your story. I don't know what the next best thing for you to do is, but you probably do. And the more of that journey. Like when you make the statement, you've helped a lot of people. That's uncomfortable for me to hear because that's not how I like to look at it, right? I've stepped in and been a support, right? Somebody to lean on just for a minute till that person starts going the right way themselves. And the more ownership somebody's able to take in their own actions. In their own consequences and in their own successes on the other side of that, I think the more likely they are to thrive.
They say that a person has to want to have recovery. You can't go up to them and say, well, you're addicted, you need to quit. And if they don't want to, they're not, no matter how many programs they go through, if they don't want to, they're not going to. Some people say you got to hit bottom before you realize that. Was your bottom in prison when your son came and said, come home?
I think I've had a few different bottoms.
Really?
Okay. And I've heard all those things said, and I agree with most of them for the most part.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're here to talk about that because that's something that us not involved with it hear it all the time, you know.
Right. So there has to be a desire. So like even for like some like 12-step self-help groups, part of the traditions for most of those groups is that like a requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. So you don't even get to be a part of the club unless you got the desire. Okay. You don't necessarily have to stop using to be a part of the club, but you got to have that desire, right? So that's kind of in all these different recovery-based programs is that desire to stop. as a child, what I went to, I was put into a treatment center to avoid juvenile hall at 14, again at 15, again as a condition of my parole at 19. So for me, the treatment was my son telling me I needed to come home.
And you'd been through a couple of recovery programs that, because you weren't ready.
Right. Good programs. When I came to the point to where I needed to move on, I still had all those tools I'd learned in those treatment programs. Mm. They were still waiting for me in the toolbox. I just had to take it out and start using them, and still had. So even though, like, the treatment didn't, quote, work,
right,
unquote, it provided a good foundation. It created a path and an avenue to different options, like different self-help groups, different things like that, to help me to know where to look when I
yeah,
wanted to.
When you were ready, you had at least some idea of which direction to go, because of your stint in those groups and everything before, even though they quote unquote didn't work. That came back to you when you were ready for it to work.
Right. Like, you get on if you're say you have, I don't know, some sort of mental health diagnosis thing going on, mm-hmm, and you get given some medication. It doesn't work in the first week or the second week, maybe the third week. The medication has to be taken repetitively so you get your baseline, right? And that's I guess that's kind of how I look at introduction to these different programs and systems, and not looking at it like there's no magical, hey, we got him in treatment, so tomorrow he's fixed, right? I think in my whole first year of recovery, that year kind of recovery birthday was a harder day for me than my 30-day birthday, right? So
explain why.
So for me, like, those so always in an addict's mind, at least always in most of the addicts that I've talked to, always in your mind is, like, at some point you're going to be cured and you're going to have the ability to do what normal folks get to do. They get to go party on the weekend. Somebody that can do a line of coke on a weekend and the rest of the year is fine, right? That's always in your head. So you get a year birth date in recovery, and you're like, well, shoot, I did it for a year. There's nothing went wrong for a whole year. I got a job now. I got my license back. My car's paid off. I got all these great things going on. I can go get drunk tonight in celebration. And you got this guy in your head that's filling you full of BS, telling you about how wonderful you did, and you get to celebrate by destroying your life again.
There you go, yep.
And then for that 1 year was hard, and that 5 year birthday was hard. Even 5 years into it, you're like, well, so I went 5 years. My whole family's all around me again. Everybody's supporting me. Hardly anybody even remembers how screwed up I was.
One shot of scotch ain't gonna hurt,
right?
Yeah.
One
little snort.
Yeah. One tiny little. Yeah. Everybody else is doing it. It's the weekend. We can.
But you can't.
No. Maybe I can. Who knows?
But you're not gonna try.
I'm not willing to. For right now, I'm going to just go back to work after this. I'm going to go home after work, hang out with my family, probably work out between home and work so I can...
So you don't look like me.
So I can get some of that. That's another thing, like, with some of us, we have to... So I didn't quit anything. I traded things off. I replaced things, right? I didn't quit getting high. I didn't quit doing drugs. I didn't quit drinking. I do something else instead.
That's something that a lot of people, I guess, do. Well, your workouts. Are you addicted to your workouts now? Would you say it that way? I don't know.
I would, and I wish I was addicted to my workouts. I'd be in a lot better shape. But I try and do so today. Today, I I try and do everything in moderation, and I don't go over the top with it. I try not to go over the top with anything. And when I recognize, that I'm staying at work for 11 hours but only getting paid for 8, I put that in check right away. A few years ago, I went to the casino with my wife. Recognized after about a half hour there that that's not a safe place for me.
Oh, really?
Okay. And I told my wife, I said, man, I got to go. You can stay, but I got to go. She said, all right, let's go. And we went and got something to eat. So always being aware of different things that turn into an excess, to me, send me a signal that I'm getting off track, that I'm no longer as focused as I need to be on what's going on.
You recognize that in yourself. Do other recovering addicts do that? I mean, I hate to say you're special, but your mindset is that, like you said, you were in the casino, you realized after a half hour, this is not where I'm supposed to be. Is that a rolling theme in recovering addicts? Or
I think so. I think so. I mean, there's all kinds of different schools of recovery and different types of approaches to recovery. But I think I think that's not specific to drug addicts, but that's people that gamble too much. That's people that drive too fast. That's kind of what an adult does, I think. At least in my own mind, that's what I see an adult doing is maybe if you're an adult and you got a couple kids and a wife and you got bills to pay, you probably don't buy that new charger you wanted to buy.
Darn.
you probably dialed in and focused. And I think just for some of us, the stakes are a little bit higher and we got to spend a little extra effort focusing on where those things are. And I think most people in recovery have different strategies for doing that. And I have, I keep a pretty good network of folks around me that call me on the BS when I miss it myself.
There you go.
And we use kind of.
Does your wife call you out?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to the beginning of your addictions and everything. And well, not the very beginning because you were like 14, 15. But after you got married, you had a son. Would you say your wife was a supporter or an enabler?
In the beginning, if we had to label it, I would say
an
enabler.
No offense, to your wife if she's listening or anything, but I'm not calling her out or anything like that. But we are here to talk about support and enabling, and I just wondered how things went with her.
Yeah. So in the beginning, she enabled me. Mm-hmm. I mean,
probably happens a lot of times,
right? It's and there's kind of that codependency thing out there that's pretty close to enabling. They're pretty similar. So things like me saying I'm gonna go out for a couple hours, or I'm gonna run to Walmart. And then I'd be back 4 hours later on my tits. Mm-hmm. And she wouldn't call me out on it. She was just glad I wasn't dead and came home. Other things like looking at not calling me out. I would buy drugs with our money, and she knew about it. She wouldn't say anything because she didn't know how to say it. She didn't know when I was going to blow up. For myself and my addiction, I never was physically violent with anybody that I love, but I sure could cut with words. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could say some mean, nasty things in an attempt to manipulate people, and it was usually pretty successful. And a lot of those times, I would try and push people away because I didn't want them to see the disgusting person that I saw when I looked in the mirror. So I would say cutting, mean, horrible things. Then if I pushed him away far enough, it gave me enough room to really get loose and self-destruct. So where my wife enabled me was she continued to love me. And she continued to come back when I cut deep until she didn't come back again.
Right.
And there's not a book for how to do any of that. You're like, man, I don't know. I'm supposed to love this person. I'm going to keep doing that. I made a deal when we got hitched that it was going to be in sickness and in health. And this son of a gun's pretty sick right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm supposed to stick around. It's not always the healthiest thing.
Do you know now how she reached that decision to just up and go? Or was she just, I'm fed up with cash?
Did she
talk to her parents? Did she talk to anybody? Or is it just that she said, I'm getting away from this guy? And I hate to get so personal with you here, but.
Well, she was pregnant and then she wasn't pregnant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, she was just done. She was just done. And she was done with how things were. She had an idea of how she wanted things to be. And she just came to the point to where she was like, man, I love you. I want you in my life. But I don't know who you are like this. So if you choose to come home, it's on you. It's not on me anymore trying to hold things together. And I think a lot of it was knowing that she didn't want our son to grow up in that lifestyle. And she didn't want to. It's like my son at that time was just starting to run around and walk around and getting big enough to start to understand things.
Is there ever too much support out there? I mean, can someone give too much support?
Yeah, I'd say yes, you can. I think that the support needs to be an appropriate amount of support, right? And that's going to differ between everybody. If somebody's doing a bench press and lifting heavy weight and they're trying to make gains, the spotter doesn't come in and snatch the bar up every time they struggle a little bit. They ride with you. They wait for you to power through that struggle. And through that, the person on the bench gets the victories. And it's not the spotter that gets the glory. I think it's like that with a lot of things. And that's where a lot of codependency comes in, is people want to come in and without even realizing it themselves, like a lot of their own self-worth is invested in this this addict's ability to recover.
Sort of like it's up to me to get you recovered?
Right. Right. So it's up to you as the family member to make sure that I recover, and then you get to go and tell all your buddies how recovered you got me.
Uh-huh.
And, man, sometimes the best thank you can get and the best recognition for what you can do is that addict's success. And you don't get that by taking ownership of their victories.
There you go.
You get to step back and let them celebrate their victories. You stand there, give them a little bit of space, be a little bit distant, and let them do the work.
You said you're going to leave here and go back to work. Where's work?
Work over at Coastal Cap, doing some housing work. So we work with a lot of different vulnerable populations, trying to get them kind of back on a path they need to be on towards self-sufficiency, and we probably do a little bit of enabling over there, and we do a lot of support.
Well, I like that, a little bit of enabling, but a lot of support.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. Cash McCallum's been with us, and thank you for being so honest. We have delved into his private life a lot here. I don't know if that's what he was expecting, but that's the way it turned. And he's been so honest and upfront with us. And thank you very much for that, Cash. Really, really do appreciate it. And I know the listeners do, too, because you were completely open and honest about everything. And you have one hell of a wife. It's really great. And tell her thanks for all of us, because I have a feeling without her, you wouldn't be here right now, would you?
I think it sure helped quite a bit.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Cash. Appreciate it. Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.